Last week we left off with the machlokes between Tosfos and Rashi as to what the concern, according to Rabbah, is with regard to a get that is brought from Chutz Laaretz. And the Gemara had said that there is a chshash midrabanan, that the Chazal were concerned, just as a chumrah, they were concerned that maybe the get poses a problem of shelo lishma, and since it's only a concern midrabanan, so the Gemara says, therefore, we are willing to believe the shliach when he tells us that he saw it written and signed lishma. And even if the husband comes and challenges that assertion later on, the Gemara says, no, we still believe the shliach. Why? Because the Gemara said on Gimel Amud Aleph, Meikara Medek Dayak. Did we get to that part in the Gemara inside yet? Meikara Medek Dayak. The Gemara said that since the shliach knows that ultimately he's going to have to, in front of either two or three people, state clearly that he saw the get written and signed, so he is going to make sure that he's telling the truth, and we take his word even against the husband's, should the husband later on complain that the get was written shlolishma. Maybe we'll read that part in the Gemara again, but just to recap Rashi and Tosis, their machlokas was the following. Rashi said the concern is that really every sofer in Chutz La'aretz knows how to write a get lishma. The concern that we're worried about is that maybe a sofer wrote a get for a particular couple. The couple decided not to use it. They threw it out. And now this fellow, who happens to have the same name as this original guy, found the get and figured, great, I'll use it for my wife, whose name is the identical name as the woman on the get as well. So according to Rashi, the concern is that he actually found a get that was written for somebody else, and that's why we're concerned that this get is shlo lishma. Whereas Tosfos said, no, we're not worried that there's an actual possibility that the husband in question found a get that was written for somebody else and it wasn't really written for him. We're worried, says Tosfos, that maybe the husband will claim, after the get has been given, that the sofer wrote this get simply for practice purposes, not for real usage, and that I, the husband, signed on Edim after it was written for practice purposes, because I, the husband, did not know that the get has to be written specifically for the particular couple in mind. If that's the Machlokas Rashi and Tosis as to what exactly the concern is with regard to the Shelo Lishma possibility that we're worried about with regard to this get. Okay, so we end up last year with a question on Rashi. Rashi says that the Gemara asks, well, what, if you believe only the shliach, one individual, to say that the get was written lishma, what's going to happen? The husband will later show up and will say that, no, the get's really written shlo lishma. And if the husband shows up and claims the get's written shlo lishma, it's going to be one against one. It's going to be husband against shliach, and if it's one against one, then, you know, you can't really go with the shliach's word anymore. So we quoted the Brisker Rav asked the following question. Brisker Rav asked the following question. The Gemara later on Daf Tes Amud Aleph says that in general, if you want to undermine the legitimacy of a get that has been given already, Ein Irur Pachas Mishnai, we don't accept a complaint against the get from less than two people. And the Gemara said, no, we're talking in the Mishnah about the possibility of the husband himself trying to undermine the get after it's been given. And Ira Dabal, that's more potent than just any Eid Echad walking in. The husband, apparently, the Gemara Daf Tes implies, has more weight, so to speak, when he tries to undermine the legitimacy of the get than an Eid Echad would. So the Brisker Rav asked, if that's the case, then when Rashi says on Gimel Amud Aleph, and the Rashi we're talking about is the third wide line of the page, when Rashi says that the Gemara is asking that if we believe only the Shliach to say that the get was written Lishma, when the husband comes and complains afterwards that it was written Shelo Lishma, it's ukichad lebahadechad. Rashi says it's going to be one against one. Why does Rashi view the husband's accusations against the get as being, eid echad against eid echad, husband versus shliach, one against one? If it's the husband who's making the complaint, so the Gemara in Daf Tes implies that the husband carries more weight than an ordinary eid echad. Ordinary eid echad, we don't allow him to undermine the legitimacy of a get. Ein ira pachas mishnayim. We don't accept one guy off the street to come and undermine a get that's been given already. The Gemara though says that in a baal who complains the get is invalid, that already is more significant than just an eid echad. The baal carries more weight. So if that's the case, Rashi should have said that the concern is. Rashi said the concern is that it's not just an chad lebahad echad. It's not just one guy against one guy, but it's that the husband himself is coming to undermine the legitimacy of the get, and that itself is caused for concern against the shliach's earlier statement of the get having been written lishma. Okay, so that's the Bishkarov's question. Why does Rashi just regard the Baal as an eid echad and not as more significant than just that? Okay, so the Bishkarov, in his Chiddushim on the Rambam in Hilchos Gerushin, says the following pshat. He says, what, after all, is it that gives the husband the right to undermine the legitimacy of a get after it's been given? Right? When the Gemara in Daf Tes says that, error of eid echad, we disregard. But error habal, that's more significant. A husband's complaint we take more seriously. Why is that? Why do we take the husband's complaint more seriously? So the Prisgrove says, the idea is the following. Yesod hadavar hu, he says, the idea behind this halacha is, mishum dehu ba'al hashtar. The husband is the ba'al hashtar. There is this notion, says Ibiskarov in Halacha, that the husband is the owner of the document. He wrote it. He created it. He's the one who is giving it to the wife. He is the Baal Hashtar. He is the one who is in charge or who is in possession of the document. And therefore, he says, that fact gives him a greater degree of believability when it comes to determining the halachic status of the shtar, to say it's kosher, to say it's possible. So that means when the Gemara Daf Tes says that once the get is given to the woman, let's say a get in Eretz Yisrael where there was no need to say b'fana nechtav, b'fana nechtam, we assume it's written lishma. The get's given, gets kosher. The Gemara says, if an eid echad walks up later and says the get's no good, we throw him out. But the husband walks up and says the get's no good, all of a sudden we got to say, it's a good possibility. Let's check into it. Let's figure out, was it really lishma, not lishma? We have to check into it. Why is the husband given this added significance, this added weight when he claims the get is illegitimate, is no good? So the Bishkarov says the idea is because the husband is the Baal Hashtar. He is the one who owns the Shtar. He is the Baal Hashtar. And that gives him greater ability to passel or to validate the Shtar.
Wouldn't that necessarily, that would give the sofer maybe more believability because he knows how he wrote it, but the actual...
You're saying with regard to writing it lishma, saying the sofer should be more believed than the husband, because the sofer was the one who was involved in the writing.
Once the sofer instructed once the baal instructed the sofer to write it, presumably that means it was lishma. The sofer is the one who was dasa.
The sofer himself, who was the one who had to write it lishma, if he himself comes and says, "I didn't write it lishma,"
yeah,
maybe we should give him believability also because he's the one who did it or didn't do it for that matter.
Yeah. Maybe it's possible that he would also be believed. The Gemara doesn't say, but
that's right. That's an interesting question. Right here, the Bishkarov said that since the husband is the one who has to give the shtar, he's the one who actually has to own the shtar when it's written. Right, it has to be written with his utensils, on his paper. And he simply appoints the sofer as the shliach to write it for him. It's really being written for him. Right? Ideally, he's supposed to write it himself. He can't, so he appoints a sofer as a shliach to write it for him. But he's really the guy in charge here. He's running the show. It's his shtar. He's behind the writing of it. So granted, he makes the shliach to do the actual physical, cursive handwriting, but he's the one who's behind the maisa of the ksiva. That's what gives him that status of baal hashtar.
Yeah, but once it leaves, baalos shouldn't necessarily make any difference. Per se. Just because I once upon a time owned something doesn't necessarily mean that I should have any greater...
It might be more than just owning. It's, who is the star speaking for? Here, it's not just that he owns a piece of paper, but he's the one who is represented by the shtar. The shtar is speaking on his behalf that I, you know, divorced my wife. Because he's the one who's writing it. He owns the paper. He's giving it. He's the one presenting the shtar. This is all about him.
Once it leaves his rishus, then it shouldn't necessarily be. I mean, he has control over it while it's in his possession. But once it leaves his possession,
that's a good question. You're saying once the shtar is given to the woman, as it has been in our case, why do we still view him as the Baal HaShtar?
Yeah.
That's a very good question. You're saying, even if the Bishkrov wants to approach get with this idea that the husband's the one behind it, because he's the one who initiates it, he has to have it written, he has to give it, it's speaking on his behalf, so he's the Baal HaShtar, and he therefore has the believability to say the shtar is valid, is not valid, but you're saying in our Gemara, the shtar has already been given to the woman. Once it's given to the woman, it's speaking on her behalf, in that it's a statement that she's been divorced already. So why is he still considered the Baal HaShtar?
Baal HaShtar maybe owns it, or maybe he's the shtar. It's his get. He's the one who wrote it. It's his debt.
You're saying maybe Baal HaShtar is a term that applies to the husband even after he gives it to the wife, yeah, because he was the one who wrote it.
Right. Doesn't literally mean that he's the owner. It means that he
wrote it.
Right. Guess whose get that is? That's, you know, Mr. X's get.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know
why
that means it's more
demonic. Mm-hmm. Okay, that could be. Maybe Bishkrov is understanding Baal HaShtar in terms of, since he's the one who wrote it, or was behind the writing of it, that's what gives him the added degree of believability with regard to the shtar. That could be. He's saying it's not necessarily who's in possession of it now, according to the Bishkrov, but rather it's who is the one who is the mover behind the shtar, who originated the shtar, who created the shtar. And that's all the husband. And since he's the one who's behind the creation of the shtar, that's what always gives him the ability to undermine the validity of it even after he has handed it off to his wife, or ex-wife, in this case. Okay, yeah, I hear that. It's a good possibility. And let's test it against it. He brings a riot to this idea from the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchas Gerushin, Perek Zayin Halacha Beis. Rambam in Hilchas Gerushin, Perek Zayin Halacha Beis says the following. He's talking about a case where a shliach delivers a get long distance within Eretz Yisrael. And there was no need to say b'fana nichtav, the get was written l'shma because it originated in Eretz Yisrael. Rambam says, what happens if the husband then later on shows up and says, the get is a forgery. I never wrote it. I never divorced her. The get's a total forgery. Okay? So Rambam says, well, the Mishnah tells us that when a get's brought in Eretz Yisrael and it's delivered to the wife, and the shliach didn't say b'fana nichtav when it was delivered because it's from Eretz Yisrael, there's no concern of lishma, should the husband later on complain that it's a forgery, so the Mishnah says, what? Last line of the Mishnah said, what do you do? Skayim b'chasamav. Okay, he challenges the get, fine. Call in the Edom who signed it, have them come in and say, yeah, we signed the get, validated, done. That's all you gotta do. Okay, that's the Mishnah. What happens though, if for whatever reason you can't find the Edom who signed the get? But the Mishnah said that if you deliver a get in Eretz Yisrael, the get is good. Should the husband later on challenge its legitimacy, just call in the Edom who signed it, have them verify the signatures that they signed on the get, and the get is kosher. But what happens, Rambam says, if you can't find these Edom for whatever reason? What happens then? You have a get that was given to a wife in Eretz Yisrael. You now have a husband who is claiming the get was a forgery. You can't verify the get by bringing in the Edom because you can't find them or anybody who recognizes their signatures. So what happens now? What's the status of the get?
Assume it's what?
Puzzle. So the question is the following. Puzzle, correct. You can't remarry on the basis of this get because we can't verify its authenticity. But would you say that we view that as a vada'os, that it's puzzle? That we take the husband's word for sure the get is forged, throw the whole thing out? In the words, in the Rambam in Hilchos Gerushin, when the get is viewed to be absolutely null and void, the Rambam says batal. So would you view this as being batal, it's absolutely worthless, never was the get to begin with? Or you say what?
Suffolk,
right? Other options, maybe it's a suffolk. On one hand, I have a get here signed by two witnesses who I can't authenticate. On the other hand, I have a husband who's now claiming the get is forged. I don't know. Do I believe the husband? The get's no good. Do I believe the get and the aiden that were given to the women, the woman? In that case, the get is good. Maybe I should view it as a suffix. Which way do you go with it? It's a little unclear. You know, it's the husband challenging the authenticity of a get that's already been delivered. So is it for sure the husband's right, or no, maybe he's right? So the Rambam in Hilchos Gerushin, Perek Zayin, Halacha Bey says, Vim lo niskayim, if the get can't be verified through the witnesses, v'lo no du edav klal, and nobody recognizes the signatures on the get, the Rambam says, what happens if she remarried on the basis of this get? Teitei, she has to leave her second husband, because she had no right to remarry. V'havlad mamzer, and the child of that second marriage is a mamzer. Shaharei ena megureshes, because she's not divorced. What does that imply? I'm saying, a husband gives his wife a get in Eretz Yisrael through a shliach. She takes the get, she goes and remarries, has a child from the second husband. Husband then shows up and claims, the get I gave you, that was given to you, was a forgery, I never wrote it. Rambam says, she's not divorced, and the child who was born from the second marriage, which we now treat as an illegitimate marriage, is a mamzer.
That means it's null and void.
Exactly. If we're treating this kid as a mamzer, that means that we're saying that the get was absolutely worthless. We're not saying he's a suffic mamzer. We're not saying, you know, well, but the evidence, we won't treat the kid as a mamzer because we don't know. We're saying, no, he's a mamzer. Done. Implying that the Rambam is saying, and this is the bottom line, according to the Rambam, that when a get is given in Eretz Yisrael, and the husband comes and challenges its legitimacy later and says it's a forgery, and we can't prove him wrong by bringing Edom, we can't find the Edom on the get for whatever reason. The Rambam says we believe the husband completely to the point that the get is thrown out of court as if it never happened. It's a pretty harsh statement. The question should be, why doesn't the Rambam view it as a suffix? Well, you have a get that's signed by two witnesses that was given to a woman. Granted, we can't prove the authenticity of these witnesses because we can't find them or anybody who knows their signature. And granted, the husband is now trying to undermine his legitimacy by claiming it's a forgery. But why should you believe the husband with absolute certainty to the point that you're going to say if she remarried in the interim, the kids are moms from the second marriage? Why do you just say that gets a suffix now? We don't know. And yet the mom says, no, we believe the husband across the board. Ain't no gracious to get is absolutely null and void. If she married somebody else, the kid from that second marriage is a mamzer. It's pretty, pretty severe. You hear the question?
The question is, why is it so severe?
The question is, why doesn't he at least treat it like a suffix? That's the question. As if the woman has a get that was given to her, signed by two Adam. It was given to her in Basin, right? Basin saw Shliach bring a get signed by two Adam. Basin didn't require him to say that he recognized the signatures because we had no chash when it was brought. It came from Eretz Yisrael. We assume everyone knows to write a get Lashma. Right? We don't automatically assume when it gets brought that it's a forgery. So Basin said, okay, give the get. Two Adam witnessed the delivery of the get. Done, she's divorced. Now, a month later, or a year later, the husband shows up and claims the get's a forgery. So we don't even take the suffix. We say, okay, we believe him off the bat.
And in this case, and so then the second, let's say she remarried, so the second marriage was never a valid marriage.
Right.
Because there's another side of it where, you know, if the first get is a suffix, then it's a suffix whether she's now married to the second guy also, right?
Correct.
So if the first get was legitimate, you know, mm-hmm. now you just say, okay, child's a mamzer, she was never married to the second guy, but maybe she really was married.
But if the first get was
legitimate,
then the second marriage is totally good.
Right. And so now you come along and you say, first get's bottle.
Right.
Because he said so, but maybe the reality is she really is married to the second guy, right? Maybe the first get.
That's what we're asking, right. As we're asking, why don't we view it as two possibilities? On the one hand, the husband claims it's a get's bottle. On the other hand, maybe the husband's wrong and the get is really valid and she is married to the second guy.
No, we
don't do that though. I'm saying no. I'm saying we accept the husband's claim that the get is bottled, the get's null and void, it's a forgery. We tell her second marriage is completely worthless, so it never really was a marriage altogether. She's considered married to the first guy all along. Her second husband's kid is now a mamzer. And it's why we take it to that extreme. Why don't you say it gets a suffix?
Right. I guess I'm just saying it's sort of doubly surprising because surprising that you just accept what the husband says.
Right.
Especially in light of the fact now you've created
right,
potential
right.
you know, other mamzeres, she's married.
Right. I mean, usually the taste of a bad mamzer is always what happens when you view a get as absolutely null and void, as it comes together. Once you accept the get as null and void, then what follows is taste of a bad mamzer. She leaves her second husband, the kid in that marriage is a mamzer. You know, in a case where the get, you know, is questionable, we'll tell her, don't remarry. If you're married already, then okay, fine. But, you know, we don't say that here. Here we say that's absolutely null and void. So the question is why. So the Brisker Rav says, he says, why is it that the Rambam paskens you accept the husband's claim across the board with absolute certainty? He says, it must be that this supports our thesis, that because the husband is the Baal Hashtar, he has this ne'emonus, this believability, to invalidate the get with absolute certainty, no, you know, with not even a suffix. Okay, he says it must be that the reason why the Rambam holds the Baal has the ability to invalidate the get completely, to the extent that we'll view the second marriage as absolutely adulterous and the kid as a mamzer, is can only be because we view the husband as being the Baal Hashtar, the one who created the shtar, who therefore has this koach to destroy the kashrus of the shtar, unless we can prove him wrong through Edim and Edim only. So the Rambam, the Biskrofi uses this Rambam, which you know, the Nosei Kalim also, Magen Mishnah also comments, this is, you know, this is not what you would have expected. You would have assumed that this is a suffix. So Biskrofi says, we see from this Rambam that he's willing to passel the get absolutely because he views the husband as having this koach of a Baal Hashtar. Okay, that's his thesis. He brings one other proof, a second proof to this idea. A second proof. The opinion in the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Ayin Beis, where the Gemara is talking about a loan document. And the Gemara says, the opinion of Rav Asi, that Mode Bishtar Shekosvo, Mode Bishtar Shekosvo, Ein Tzarech Lekaimo. The Gemara says, if a borrower concedes that he, in fact, you know, wrote this shtar hava, meaning, yeah, I borrowed the money. Right? You have a shtar hava, a promissory note, and we can't verify the witnesses on the promissory notes. So the Gemara says, well, if the borrower concedes that he wrote it, that's as good as an admission as you could ever hope for, right? You heard the borrower himself saying, yeah, I wrote the promissory note, I borrowed the money. So the Gemara says, there's no longer any need to find Edom for that commissary note verification because the man in question admitted he wrote it, he borrowed the money. But the Gemara takes it a step further. The Gemara says, not only do you not need to find Edom anymore if the borrower concedes that he wrote it, but what happens in general when there's a loan and the borrower can't afford to pay back the loan? So the halacha is that if the borrower, after the time of the loan, had sold some real estate that he owned, and now he has no assets left to pay off the loan, what's the halacha? Halacha is that the lender has a lien on the real estate that the borrower used to own at the time of the loan, and even though it was subsequently sold off to some unsuspecting investor, the lender can track down the investor and seize the property from him. And then the investor loses out because now he's stuck trying to recoup his losses from the borrower. So the Gemara says, what happens if a lender walks into Beis Din with an unverifiable loan document? There are Edom signed on it, but we don't recognize them, and we can't find people who recognize the signatures. But, so I can't collect that if I can't verify it. But what happens? The borrower concedes, yeah, I wrote the promissory note, I borrowed the money. Okay, so I can go after the borrower and get my money back. So Gemara says, but not only that, but if the borrower has no assets left, I can even go after the investor who bought real estate from the borrower. Even though who's the loser now?
The investor's
losing out. So the question for Scrub asks is, one second here. Just because the borrower is willing to concede that he borrowed the money, so I should lose out now as the investor? What gives him the right, on his word, to give this document all its halachic credence and reliability, even without any Edom to back it up, if I'm the one who stands to lose out now? I mean, it's one thing if you say the borrower concedes he wrote the notes and he borrowed the money and now he's got to pay back the loan. Good, that's his option. You know, it's his money. He agrees he owes it. Pay it back, 100%. But if he's got no money left to pay back the loan and he says, yeah, I wrote that note, I borrowed the money, sorry, I can't help you, I'm bankrupt. So now, because of his word alone, Basin's going to allow the lender to go and seize the real estate from some guy who bought it from this borrower a year ago? Even though I can't bring in Adam to confirm the validity of the shtar? Why should the borrower's word be enough to now harm his purchaser from a year ago? That's not fair. You hear the question? So Biskrov says, aha, must be once again. Why is this halacha true? Because the borrower, who is always the one who writes up a promissory note, right? When you talk about promissory notes, the loan documents, it's the borrower who is indebting himself. He's the one who creates or initiates or writes the shtar. So here, who's the baal hashtar, says the Biskrov? It's the borrower. And once again, the borrower is given this ability as the baal hashtar, as the initiator, the originator of this document, to bestow validity on it halachically, even at the expense of somebody else. That's what he's saying. That's what you see from this halacha, says the Biskrov. Continue that he would then, he's in cahoots with the lender, and he's in cahoots with the lender to
just to get those to nechassim back.
Maybe really it never was a loan here, but I sold this field to somebody and I regret it. So I called a buddy of mine and said, listen, let's concoct a loan that you lent me money before the purchase, and I have no money left. And
this would seem this was like in a uh-huh. great case where like you would apply it
for kinunya. Interesting question. I don't know. I have to look at the sigla more carefully. Modu v'shtashu kasva. Interesting question. I don't know.
I can understand on his own where he's being modu, but it's for someone else.
Right. No, other question. It's a good question. Right. It's a good question. I don't know. Offhand, I don't know. The Gemara above Mishnah Shnayim also talks about different possibilities of kinyanim where we're choshish for husband and wife, ksuba, kinyanim there. I don't recall if it's discussed in regard to this halacha or not. Take a look. Maybe it is. I don't recall. Okay, so the Biskrov has two rayas from this case of the loan document and from the case of the Rambam to prove that a baal shtar has the ability to undermine the validity of a shtar completely or to verify it completely. So, now getting back to our Rashi here. Right, the question he had asked on Rashi was what? That with regard to a husband trying to undermine the legitimacy of a get, the husband should be given this status of what? Of baal hashtar. And if he's the baal hashtar, it's not just a one against a one, the husband's word against the shliach's word. No, we should say, even though the husband said before nechtav, I saw it written lishma, but if the husband claims it was not written lishma, we should believe the husband over the shliach, because why? Because he's the baal hashtar. That was Biskrov's kash against Rashi. Because why does Rashi say pshat in the Gemara is that when the husband complains against the shliach later on that the get is l'shalo l'shma, Rashi says it's one against one. Rashi should have said, ask the Biskrov, that it's baal hashtar always wins. That was his question against Rashi. Is that right? Are we good with that? So he makes the following distinction. He's now trying to explain, in order to answer this question on Rashi, why Rashi does not apply this principle of baal hashtar always trumps, baal hashtar always comes out on top, baal hashtar always has the right to invalidate a get completely. Why doesn't Rashi apply that principle to our Gemara here when the Gemara asks that if the shliach says the get was written lishma and the husband complains later on that it's shalo lishma, the get's not good, why doesn't Rashi apply the idea of baal hashtar here? Why does Rashi just say, oh, it's one against one? That's the question he's trying to deal with. Yeah.
Just one quick question. The two proofs of this notion of
right.
baal hashtar.
Right.
One is a proof where he says, yes, I did write that shtar.
Correct.
One is a proof where he says, no, I did not write that
correct.
Shtar.
Correct. Right.
So are we saying that this concept of baal hashtar trumps positive, negative, whatever?
Yes,
he says,
he's saying bein lahachshir, bein lifsol. Either way. Okay. Whether he's trying to authenticate it, whether he's trying to invalidate it. Either way it goes. Right. Right. The question he's trying to deal with now is, why doesn't Rashi apply it here with regard to the question of was the get written lishma or shlo lishma? The shliach says it's written lishma. And the Gemara asks, well, if you believe only one shliach, then when the husband comes and says later on it's shlo lishma, that should negate what the shliach said. So Rashi says, why would it negate it? Because it's one against one. Why doesn't he say baal hashtar? So Biskrov is now trying to explain, he's going to explain now why the concept of baal hashtar does not work with regard to the statement of the baal here that the get was written shlo lishma.
Well, because he didn't really write it here, so he would have no real knowledge of lishma.
Okay, but that's true. But still, we said before that even though he might have appointed a sofer as a shliach to write it for him, but he's really the one in charge of the writing. It has to be written on his behalf.
But at the end of the day, the question of the shema would have to be in the sofer's mind.
Well, the sofer's supposed to verbalize it when he does it. And that's what Yosef was getting at earlier. You know, since the sofer did it or didn't do it, so really we should believe the sofer, not the baal, in this regard. It's a fair point. I guess this question is that Baal HaShtar means that he has the ability to invalidate the validity, invalidate the shtar. So why can't he do that according to Rashi with regard to Lishma or Shlo Lishma? So you're saying it's because that was an action that wasn't really totally on him. Saying whether the shtar is forged altogether or not, that you can say the husband knows because he's the one who's supposed to be the originator of the shtar. But Shlo Lishma, you're saying he might have very well, you know, ordered the writing of it, but the Shlul Shema aspect of it is nothing that he was in charge of.
It's technical.
Right. It's a technicality that was really dependent on the person who did the actual handwriting. That's a good ha'ara.
Almost like mode of a mixer in some way.
The prescriber says something a little similar, not exactly the same. Let's try to see if it's how similar it is. He's going to work with a similar kind of distinction between saying I never wrote it and saying it's Shlul Shema. I'm not sure he's saying exactly what you're saying, although maybe it's along the same lines. Let's take a look. His response is the following. He says that according to Rashi, the privilege granted to the Baal HaShtar, so to speak, to invalidate a shtar, is only with regard to the very essence of what makes a shtar a kosher shtar. When we speak of shtar, we speak of a shtar which serves as proof of something. So, what allows a shtar to serve as proof of something? So, he says, only with regard to the halachos of the shtar itself, of shtar in general, does the baal shtar have the right to undermine it. For example, he says, to say I never wrote it, or to say, yes, I wrote it, but I didn't give it to you as a shliach to give my wife, I gave it to you just to safekeep for me. You know, that's a statement which is essentially saying that there is no working shtar here at all in the role of eidos. Now, the kosher shtar serves as eidos, as witness, as testimony. Shtar can serve as testimony that there was a loan. Shtar can serve as testimony that there was a divorce. Shtar can serve as testimony that there was a kedushin. And shtar serves in the role of eidos. It's an eidos in writing is what it is. So Biskrov says, when does the originator of the shtar have the right as the baal hashtar to undermine the validity of the shtar? Only when his claim, his statement, undermines the very essence of the role of the shtar. So if he claims I never wrote it, then he's undermining the very essence of what the shtar is all about. He's saying that the shtar never served as eidus, as shtar altogether. What's he getting at? He says the following. Here, where he's not claiming that I didn't write the shtar, the get, right? He's claiming that, yes, I gave you the get in our Gemara here. But what's he claiming? He's claiming it was written Shlo Lishma. Right, according to Rashi, what's that concern that we said earlier? He's claiming, what?
That it was sitting around.
Right. According to Rashi's understanding of the Gemara, he's claiming, yeah, I gave the shtar to the shliach to give my wife, but I found it in the garbage. It was written for somebody else. So he's conceding that he gave the shtar to the shliach, he's conceding that he intended the shtar to serve as what? As proof in writing that he wanted to divorce his wife. But how's he undermining it? Simply by saying that with regard to the unique halachas that govern Gerushin in particular, this get was not written by the sofer for me, it was written for somebody else. Meaning a get is one of many types of shtaros. Like shtar is a much broader concept that applies to shtar gerushin, shtar kedushin, shtar halva, shtar mechira. Like a shtar as eidos in writing can be one of many things. It can be a document that proves a sale. It can be a document that proves a loan. It can be a document that proves a divorce. It can be a document that proves a marriage. Here in our Gemara, we're discussing in particular the shtar of gerushin, of get. And here we're saying that what's the husband saying? He's not saying that I never intended to serve as proof of divorce. I never intended to serve as divorce. He's continuing. Yeah, I gave you the get to give my wife. I gave it to you to serve as a divorcing instrument. But what he's claiming is that, but with regard to the unique halachas that govern get in particular, there's a problem here because I didn't write it. It wasn't written for me. I found it in the garbage. It was written for somebody else. So the Briskrov says, if that's what's going on here, which is what's going on here, the get itself still serves as edus, as testimony, as proof, as far as shtar is concerned, that there was a divorce here. A very subtle splitting distinction here. He says the shtar, as far as its ability to function as proof, as edus, as testimony, is still valid because he concedes he gave the shtar to his shliach. The problem, though, here is a specific one to get, that it, there was a problem in effecting the divorce because it was written shlo lishma. So that halacha of lishma and shlo lishma is not a halacha that applies in general to all types of shtaros. That applies specifically to the ability to effect a divorce. So if that's the case, says the Briskarov, we don't apply that principle of bal hashtar trumps all to a unique halacha that is relevant only to the intricacies of how to effect a divorce. It's kind of interesting subtle split here he's making. As the privilege of bal hashtar to undermine or to validate a document is only with regard to a situation where he makes a statement that relates to the general laws of proof in writing, the general laws of documentation, of shtaros in Kol HaTorah Kula. To say that I didn't write it, I wrote it, but I didn't give it to intend to use as proof. I wrote it to you, told on to, for me. That's a statement that affects the validity of a shtar in all areas of shtaros. But here, where he's conceding that, yeah, I gave it to give to my wife, to serve as a medium of divorce and as proof of divorce. He's not undermining the ability of the shtar to serve as proof of a divorce. He's conceding that point. He's simply attempting to undermine the validity of this document to serve as a valid medium of divorce because of the specific din of shlo lishma that applies only to get. That's not an attack on the general laws of shtar in general or on the ability of the shtar to serve as edus b'ksav in general. It's an attack on the ability of this shtar to affect the geushin, in this case, of get. If that's the case, says the Briskarov, you don't apply the privileges of Baal Hashtar to that kind of claim. The privileges of Baal Hashtar only relate to a situation where he's making a claim that relates to the role of this shtar as regards to the laws of shtaros in all areas of halachas of shtar. But here he's making a claim with regard to the halachas of Gerishin in particular, and on that he doesn't have that privilege of Baal Hashtar.
Why?
Does he say why? That's a good question. Maybe that brings us to what Yossi and Michael were saying before. Right, so maybe to answer the why, it has to come on to Yossi and Michael, that the koach that you have as the originator of the shtar relates to your commissioning its writing. Or to whether or not you gave it to the shliach to deliver it or not. But once you're dealing with something which is, I'm not sure this is what he's saying, but I mean, he doesn't get into this. You know, that's first guitar in general, just the what, not the why. But if you wanted to suggest the why, maybe it's because the lishma here is not his role. It's a halacha that relates to get, not connected to the role of the baal hashtar, specifically because it's the person who does the writing. Whether or not he's the Baal Ashtar or not, like you were saying, and you were saying, it's the Sofer who does the Lishma. It's not the Baal Ashtar per se who has to have the Lishma in mind. It's the Sofer has to have Lishma in mind. Maybe that's why it's a halacha that's disassociated from the Baal Ashtar. So that could be where you're, you know, maybe what you were saying is the why to this Shtickle Torah. If I recall correctly, I think of Moshe Lichtenstein once wrote an article. What?
My favorite article,
Lahat Briskarov. Well, I think, if I recall correctly, I think he makes this point, not this point particularly, he says in general, Briskarov is all about just defining what do we have here, and the next step would be the why do we have that what here. So I guess you guys are doing the why, and Briskarov is doing the what. But I think it works well together. Now, the what here is that, the Briskarov's yesod is that a Baal Ashtar only has the privilege of Baal Ashtar with regard to Dinan that relate to the role of the shtar as edus b'ksav in general. But a specific halacha in get, he doesn't have that privilege to. You're suggesting the reason for that is because this particular halacha relates to the sofer, not per se to the baal shtar. Make sense? Yeah? Okay, all the legal minds at the table here, a lot of them here, all in agreement? The distinction here? Any questions, complaints, RS?
Why is it when the Baal is saying, like, I never wrote it?
Right.
And then two Adams, and you do have two Adams in the Kayyamit.
Why does it lose the Baal Shtar privilege?
Yeah.
Saying in the case of the Baal, in the case of the Rambam, where the Baal comes and claims, I never wrote the get.
Like in the Gemara and the Dantes.
Right. And then you bring two Adams to say that, no, the get was written and signed properly.
Right.
We then throw the husband out of court.
Right. Why then you lose it? Because then you're sort of this empowering being.
Right. Why does Baal Shtar not allow? Why is Baal Shtar not given the privilege to override even two Adam?
Right.
Obviously, it would never work because you can never have such a thing as Shtar otherwise. If that would be the case, I think it's because we always accept two Adam as final word, no matter what. As Adus of two Adam is always the final word in halacha. The Baal Shtar is given that privilege to function with that added privilege in the absence of Adus of two Adam. Now that's where we apply that din. Right? Motiv Shtar Shekosvo, the borrower agrees he wrote the Shtar is when there's no Adam to prove it otherwise. The case of the Rambam is the case where there are no Adam in Mekayim to get. Then we take on the Baal Shtar privilege. Whenever there's two Adam to say something, that of course is the final word in halacha, even against the Baal Shtar.
So in the two proofs, it's kind of a one against zero, right?
There was no Adus in either case, and the Baal Shtar, therefore, is the one who's believed, right?
Right. And we see one against two, this power doesn't work. But
right.
What about one against once? I guess it would work, right? That
right.
There's one Adus against him.
Baal Shtar overrides him.
Right.
Right, but what the Bishkrov is saying is that Rashi here does not come on to Baal Shtar because this is not a Baal Shtar example.
Right,
but you're right, you're correct. Okay, now getting back to, as promised last week, to the Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos we started out with. So, we said the Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos was, are we actually worried that the get really was written Shlo Lishma, like Rashi says, that he might have found it in the garbage from somebody else? Or we're just worried that the husband's going to come later on and complain that, well, I know the get was written just for practice purposes, and I signed it with Adam Shlo Lishma. It's just the complaints of the husband we're concerned about. So Viskrov says that according to Rashi, if not for the fact that we're worried, as Rashi said, for the possibility that the husband actually found a get in the garbage that was really written for somebody else, we wouldn't be concerned, oh, what happens if the husband comes and claims that the get was written for practice purposes and he found it, like Tosa said. Why? Because in the way Tosa understood the sugya, Tosa said, our concern is maybe the husband will show up a year, a week, a month, a year later and claim that the get was written for purposes of practice, and I signed on Adam not realizing myself that it had to be written Lishma. So Bishkrov says, Rashi would say that we wouldn't be worried about that husband coming and complaining that I wrote the get, that I signed the Adam Shlo Lishma on the get. Why? Because whenever we're talking about a complaint of Shlo Lishma, the husband's complaints are not given the weight of a Baal Shtar's complaints when it comes to Shlo Lishma. The husband's treated like any Eid Echad in general. So, getting back to Tosfos and Rashi, when the Gemara was asking, what are we worried about? Why do we make the Shliach say b'fana nechtav, b'fana nechtam? So Rashi said we're worried about an actual concern that maybe the get really was written Shlo Lishma. So the Shliach has to assure us, no, I saw it written for this guy, Lishma. Tosfos said we're not really worried that be'emes it was written Shlo Lishma. We're worried about the husband claiming it was written Shlo Lishma. So Mr. Grubb says, but according to Rashi, that wouldn't scare us, that the husband might claim it's written Shlo Lishma. Why? Because as we just explained, when it comes to the husband complaining that get was written Shlo Lishma, we don't give the husband's complaints add a legitimacy as a Baal HaShtar. We say, oh, you're complaining, it's Shlul Lishma? You're just like any old Eid Achad. Out you go. So Rashi, because he assumes that a complaint of Shlul Lishma doesn't have the added weight of a Baal HaShtar, couldn't learn the Gemara like Tosis learns the Gemara, that the whole need from Fanei Nichtav is because we're worried about the husband complaining it was written Shlul Lishma. Because according to Rashi, that wouldn't be anything of concern. That would be just an Eid Achad. We kick him out. It's only because Rashi says, that's why Rashi says, that the reason why the Shliach has Sivah Fanei Nichtav is because we're actually concerned that Be'emes, maybe really the get was found in the garbage. Maybe it really was Shlul Lishma. As Chazal were actually worried that maybe the get actually was Shlul Lishma, and that's why they require the Shliach to say that the get was written in front of Milishma for this individual only. Tosis says that we're what? Tosis, we're not. So what does Tosis do in terms of the Baal HaShtar Svar? And as Tosis apparently is going to give the husband's complaints, you know, added weight, even if it claims it's written Shlul Lishma. So anyway, it seems from Biskrov, maybe the Tosis would say that even with regard to a complaint of Shlul Lishma, the husband has the added weight of a Baal HaShtar. And that's how we have to get the Shliach to say B'fanei Nichtav to negate that. Right, what?
Right.
And as according to Tosfos, it would seem, right, based on the Shtickel Torah, that even if the husband complains afterwards that the get was written Shlul Lishma, that also gives, he also has the weight there of a Baal HaShtar, and that's why I need the Shliach to fend it off beforehand by saying B'fanei Nichtav, B'fanei Nichtav. Okay, and any questions on that before we just finish it off? This idea? Any reactions, thoughts, questions? No? Okay, so then the Brisker Rav just looks back at the Gemara. So how do you, and the bottom line is, in Lumdus in general, any Lumdus has to always fit back into the words, Shaka Vataria. So he does that here very nicely. He has a great lumdus here in Rashi Tosis. Now he says, well, let's see how it plugs back into the Gemara. So what was the Gemara's question? The Gemara had initially asked, on the top line of the Gimel Amud Aleph, Gemara asked, Hi Kuluhu, you think it's a leniency to believe the Shliach to say the get was written Lishma? Chumruhu, that's a stringency. Why? If you were to initially require two Adim to accompany the get and to say we saw the get written Lishma, Lo asi bal ma'aru pasale, then the husband would never be able to complain that it was shlo lishma because the husband cannot do anything against two edim. But chad, third line, chad, only one shliach is believed to say they get to it in shlo lishma, asi bal ma'aru pasale. The husband then would have the ability to challenge that assertion and to pasal the get. So, the Bishkarov explains that what the Gemara is saying is the following. If the concern of this get being written Shlul Lishma is a concern midrabanan, as we said in the Gemara, and Mishum Iguna, because of the Aguna concerns, will be lenient to believe this one Shliach as an Eid Achad, to say it's written Lishma. So the din of Eid Achad in general is, if one Eid Achad says one thing, another Eid Achad challenges it, so you cancel them both out. You don't believe either one. That's what Rashi says over here. As if the Gemara is asking, says Brisker Rav, that if you're going to be mekel mishum iguna to believe the shliach as an erachad, then as Rashi says, if the husband then complains and says, no, it's shlo lishma, uki chad le b'harechad. It's like one erachad versus another erachad. Safek, we don't know who's right. Kick them both out. So what does the Gemara then answer? The Gemara says, no. Fourth line. Kavan to Omar Mar, since the Gemara says later on, Bifnei Kama Nos No La, when the Shliach has to give the get to the woman, in front of how many people does he have to do so? Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Chanina disagree. Chad Omar Bifnei Shnayan, V'chad Omar Bifnei Shlosha, one says he has to deliver the get in front of the woman in front of two people, so that he can recite B'fanei Nichtav in front of two witnesses. And one says he has to, in fact, give it and recite that statement in front of three people. So the Shliach knows he's going to have an audience listening to him. Therefore, the Gemara says, Meikara, from the very beginning, when the shliach gets the get from the husband, meidak dayak, he's going to be very, very particular to ensure that everything is done properly. Velo asi le'oruye nafshei, he's not going to come and deliver this get and do anything that's going to then risk his reputation should he found to be lying. In other words, the Gemara says, we give the shliach added ne'emanus because he knows he's going to be put on the hot seat when he gets to town to say, was this get lishma? He's going to say yes, and everyone's going to be listening. So from the very beginning, the Gemara says he's going to be very certain to make sure that he knows that the get was written lishma and that there's no problems here. So what's the Gemara answering here? And that's why we don't believe that Baal, should the Baal come later on and claim the get shlo lishma. So the Skruf says what the Gemara essentially is saying here is the following. The Gemara essentially is saying is that no, that when we believe the shliach here to say b'fana nechta, b'fana nechtam, it's not that we believe him like we believe any eid echad, which then leaves him open and vulnerable to the husband coming in as a second eid echad to cancel out what he said. Rather, he says, the reason we believe the shliach here is because since there's this sevara of meikar medik dayak, he's going to be extra certain to make sure he knows what he's doing and he's watching and he's telling the truth. So there's an added ne'emonos here, says the Brisk Rav, is what the Gemara is saying. There's an added ne'emonos that we give the shliach only. And even when the husband comes later as an eid echad to say it's shlo l'shma, his koach as an eid echad doesn't measure up to the ne'emonos of the shliach, who has more ne'emonos than an eid echad. That's the pshat. Meaning, says the Brisk Rav, what happened in the Gemara is the following. In the Shaka Levatari of the Gemara, the Gemara originally asked, why do you believe only a shliach, only an eid echad? So the Gemara said, because really all getin are written lishma. There's only a chashash d'rabbanan here that maybe this get was found in the garbage and was written for somebody else. And since it's only a chashash d'rabbanan, and we don't want the woman to be an aguna, so d'rabbanan we believe the shliach as an eid echad. So Gemara asks, oh, you believe the shliach as an eid echad? If that's the case, he's then open and vulnerable to the husband coming in as an eid echad. Eid Echad versus Eid Echad, kick them both out. You don't believe the Shliach anymore. So the Gemara answers, no, since Meikar Medik Dayak, since he knows he's going to be asked publicly, was this get written Lishma, he's going to be sure from the very beginning to make sure he saw the get written Lishma, and therefore his Ne'amanus now, when he says, B'fanei Nechtav, bottom line, we're saying now, according to Rabbah, when the Mishnah says that the Shliach is believed to say B'fanei Nechtav and saw written Lishma, that Ne'amanus, says the Gemara, as the Brisk Rav understands it, it's not simply the ne'emanus of an eid echad, it's the added ne'emanus of a shliach, which is greater than the ne'emanus of a regular eid echad. It's the added ne'emanus of a shliach that would withstand even the later subsequent possible challenge of the husband, who would only be treated as an eid echad. Why only eid echad, not as ba'al shtar? That the Rishkav explained already, because when you're claiming shlo l'shma, you're not afforded the privileges of a ba'al shtar, you're afforded only the din of an eid echad. But if you, the Baal, as an Eid Echad, are coming up against the shliach has the added ne'emanus of a shliach, which trumps the ne'emanus of an Eid Echad, and therefore the shliach, once he says upon an Echad, would be able to withstand even the subsequent challenge of a husband who claims that it's shlo lishma.
And the only this because of iguna here.
As the reason why we believe the shliach altogether is because of iguna, right? But once we believe him because of iguna, we give him the added ne'emanus of a shliach, which is greater than the ne'emanus of an eid echad, namely that of the Baal. That's how Rishkov understands the Shaka Vatari here of the Gemara. Okay?
And
yeah?
Just the added ne'emanus of the shliach is, I mean, aside from the iguna where we want to kind of bump him up, but is there any other, where does that power?
Where else do we find that shliach has this added ne'emanus?
Yeah. And just because he's made a dike at the beginning, does that necessarily, is that the soul focus?
I think we find the same idea in Gemara Yevamos. Gemara Yevamos talks about an Isha who comes to say that her husband was killed. And there's no Eidus to say that he died. But there, the Gemara says the same idea, that Mishum Iguna, they want to believe her. If an Eid Echad comes up later and says your husband didn't die, she'll be in big sorrows. The Gemara there says the same idea, that since she knows the stakes are so serious, so she'll be very, very, very meticulous with her, you know, make sure she has her story straight before she comes
so
to the basin.
So you say the Edom are going to do the same thing, are going to be...
I'm sorry?
Careful. We're going to say that Ed over here is going to... The Shidduch is going to be very careful.
Yeah, right.
For that exact same reason.
Different reason. I mean, the Gemara says over here that because the Shidduch knows he's going to be held accountable for what he says in front of two or three people. And based on, for that reason, he's going to be very particular. He doesn't want to ruin his reputation.
That's what I meant by Mishumigunim, because there's no really basis of anyone says something in court alone. He has any nemanus that what he's saying is true. But we're makel here, because of Iguna, it's added with the, therefore we allow it, given the fact that we know that he will be careful.
Right, so Erecha, we said, is believed by Isurim in general, but not by Dovash of Erva. Here, even though it's Dovash of Erva, Arias, we still believe the Shliach, because it's added in Meikar, Meidik Dayak, and the whole Shach, Shalom, Drabanon, and since the whole consensus is Drabanon to begin with, that's why we can rely on the Heter Mishnah Meguna will give the Namanas of the Shliach added weight. Because Midrash Raisa, you see a get coming in from Chutz Laaretz, you can assume it's the Shema. Now, the only concern that Shlo Shema is a Drabanon concern.
Because that's two...
Two Edom, and because Rov saw from Chutz Laaretz and no Lishma. So Midrash Raisa, we have no reason to be worried. The whole reason to be worried is the Drabanon reason. That's an added Chumrah. Mm-hmm. Oh, added Chumrah is we're not going to hold up to added Chumrah when it comes to Iguna. That's what we're saying. All right. Okay. Next shir, Mirtz Hashem. I'd like to look at the next few next section of the Gemara. Ula Rava de Amar. Until Virava. So Ula Rava de Amar. Let's see what it's about. It's until the first word on the line is Virava. It's about how many lines is that? 15 lines. About 16, 17 lines, down towards the middle of the page, back in Mara, and there is a Machlokas Rambam Ramban discussed by Reb Chaim and Hilchos Eidos. Let's get the exact source here. Sorry. And Hilchos Eidos, Perek Gimel Halacha Daled. Machlokas Rambam Ramban and Reb Chaim there. So we'll hopefully get to that. There was one point that I didn't get to tonight, which maybe won't get to altogether, but anybody's curious, there is a discussion that Rambam we start off with today. The Rambam which says that a get that's getting given in Eretz Yisrael with no b'fan anichtav, and the husband later on challenges it, and you can't find an Edom to back up the get is considered absolutely batel. And the question was why. So the Brisker Rav gave the idea of Baal HaShtar has this ability to invalidate a get completely if there's no Edom to back it up. So there's a discussion of this Rambam as well by the Rav in Igros Hagrid on that Halacha and Hilchos Gerushin, Perek Zayin Halacha Beis. Actually, Machlokas to him and his father about Shatan Rambam. Not sure I'll get into it, but if you want to take a look at it, it's page Sadi. Dalid, Sadi Zion. That's where the discussion is. We talked about that Rambam as well. Has a slightly different variation of the of the Pshat Rambam. Okay. Shacharach. Have a great night.